This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to the PFC podcast. The views and opinions you are about to hear are the speakers and do not necessarily reflect those of anyone else. Now on to the podcast.
Hi, I want to introduce myself. My name is Jim, really just Jim. It doesn't really matter what job I'm doing right now. I'll tell you, but it doesn't really matter. Because what really matters is how we're going to take care of our national treasure. That is the sons and daughters of our nation when we send them into harm's way. That's what matters. And as we go through this talk, I want you to keep that in mind. Think about risk to them. Not risk to you. Not risk to those people sitting in a white tower. Not the risk to someone's career. I'm talking about the risk to life of our national treasure. And for many of you listening, you are part of that national treasure. And if you're a medical provider or a commander, you're tasked to safeguard that treasure. You know this. I want to help you a little bit along that path. So I told you it doesn't matter what my job is, but I'll tell you anyways. My name is Jim. I just happen to be an active duty colonel in the U.S. Army. I'm currently serving as a U.S. Army medical liaison to the British Army and the British Ministry of Defense. That sounds cool, but in many ways it's irrelevant. What you do need to understand is first and foremost is I'm just a person like everybody else. And I treat everybody with dignity and respect. Regardless of rank, regardless of position, sex, ethical background, or ethnic background, we must all treat them with dignity and respect. Because that will make our job much easier down the line. So I'm just a person who volunteered to be a soldier. I wasn't forced to be a soldier. I volunteered to be a soldier. I love soldiers. I love soldiering. And some days I love the Army. So I'm volunteered as a soldier. And I just happen to be an officer. And I just happen to have worked in special operations for many years. I just happen to be a physician, and I just happen to be an emergency medicine physician who is the Surgeon General's consultant for operational medicine. But what's important for you to understand is I am not defined by medicine. I am informed by medicine, just like you are if you're on a team as the team medic. They may call you medic, but the bottom line is you're a soldier and you're an NCO first, and you're tasked to do many things. You may have a better understanding of medicine, but you are not defined by medicine. You are informed by medicine. And as a result, I will tell you, you are tasked, like I am, to play many roles. And it's through that looking glass that I would ask you, as well as the commanders listening, to consider the threat and then consider how one might mitigate risk in the changing world we face. Because the world is changing, and make no mistake about it. Threats now carry many different forms and incur in many different environments. There are no battle lines drawn anymore. And more frequently, we are asked to engage in a rapidly evolving situation. Afghanistan and Iraq is not the future. We did a tremendous job in our conflict in Afghanistan and Iraq by decreasing the died of wounds rate over time, despite a significantly increasing injury severity score. And we got so good at it that, no kidding, the trauma system in a deployed environment was better than that of the United States. We had a higher likelihood of survival if you were injured in combat from a significantly worse injury of blast and penetrating trauma than if you were injured in the United States in a similar or less severe accident. But how did we do that? Now, we are good at medicine, but we are very poor at adapting to the environment. So in Afghanistan and Iraq, we did not adapt to the environment. We simply adapted the environment. We built level 3 hospitals with CT scanners. We had neurosurgeons. More importantly, the Secretary of Defense mandated that there would be 60-minute medevac in both theaters. What that meant was we built forward operating bases and combat outposts that were 30 minutes by rotary wing from every place. This would ensure that there was support for medical evacuation. This meant there was communication, there was bed down locations, there was maintenance, there was fuel, there was medical that we could fall into very rapidly if we needed to. And we built up each one of these bases to an environment where when we came back on rotations, many of us were coming back to the same locations that we had left 8 months earlier. The carvings we put on our desks when we left were still there. The same computer that we sat at before, the same bed that we slept in before was still there, and we continued to enhance those positions. So we didn't adapt to the environment. We adapted the environment. And because of 60-minute medevac, we had the lowest died of wounds rate in the history of warfare. We poured billions of dollars into that environment. And we have now over 2 generations of officers and NCOs who think that is what warfare is like. And more importantly, that is the support that they have come to expect. We have general officers right now who started out as battalion commanders, who as a battalion commander in their first time in conflict saw 60-minute medevac. And throughout their career, they saw that as well. Many of them know nothing else and that is the standard. So for as much as the complaint as they may have about firm base or home health care back in the continental United States, for lack of convenience, they have come to expect tremendous ability and care in the deployed setting. But that is not the future. The future of combat takes us into much more austere environments. It takes us into much more rapidly changing environments. And it takes us into environments where we are no longer the big man on campus. In Iraq and Afghanistan, it was easy to move in and out of those countries. We just got on the big gray birds, had the biggest guns, and were able to show up. Well, it's easy to work inside of a failed state. especially when you're the ones who failed it or made it fall. So I'm not casting political judgments on those actions. I'm simply stating that it made it very easy for us to operate in the U.S. military because there were no rules, and whatever government that was put in place after we deposed the Taliban was working with us. And we simply had to just fly in, and for the most part, we had carte blanche. Much later on, it got more restrictive. But for well over a decade, from a guy who jumped into Afghanistan in 2001 and spent a decade from 2001 to 2011, virtually every year in either Afghanistan or Iraq, we had carte blanche. The future is not that way, because we are going to be sent around the world to work in permissive or more likely semi-permissive environments, and we're not going to be working in failed states. We're going to be working in sovereign nations. And it doesn't matter that you're the army with the big guns and the big gray plane, because you can't just show up there and do whatever you want. Because you have no authority to do anything in that country without the ambassador's approval. So you won't have the same architecture or support mechanism like we had in Afghanistan or Iraq. Because there are no active combat operations going there. The same cornucopia of money is not present there. So you will have to adapt to those environments and work in those environments. But there will be an expectation of commanders that the medical care will be the same what they got accustomed to in Afghanistan and Iraq. It is our job to inform them that it's different. And it's their job to understand it and understand the risk that goes with it. So how are things changing? And what is this changing environment that we're tasked to fight in or operate in? Well, the Tradotians tell us that we need to be prepared to win in a complex world. Win in a complex world. So let's take a minute and just understand what that means, because we can break it down very simply. What does the word win mean? It doesn't mean just from an army standpoint or an Air Force or a Navy standpoint. Winning means utilizing every instrument of national power to bring to bear on a conflict to bring resolution. Now, classically, we are taught that the four big implements of instruments of national power are diplomacy, information, military, and economic. And if I were to write that on a chalkboard in an acronym, I would write capital D, capital I, small m, and capital E. And why would we write it that way? Because the three capital letters are the ones that should be used most frequently and have the greatest effect. Diplomacy, information, and economic leverages. The M is lowercase because it should be used the least frequency and, quite frankly, should have the least amount of effort or force behind it. The reality is what we see is often the military is thrown into an environment, quite frankly, to buy time for the diplomatic, information, and economic elements to bring their power to bear. We are seeing more and more rapidly that the military is being deployed very rapidly in a actively evolving environment, whether it be true combat or humanitarian crisis, much like when I deployed to Liberia as the lead medical provider on the ground for Operation United Assistance in Liberia. So we are used to show a rapid response while the rest of whole of government starts to gin up their forces. So we need to understand when means whole of government, all of government. So you better just, for beginners, you better know how to think joint, because that's the JV. If you're not able to think and talk and check your ego at the door and work in an Air Force, Army, Navy, and Marine Corps and soft environment, you're already failing. That is the JV. What you need to understand is all the other aspects of government. You better be comfortable working with the Department of State. You better think about the FBI. You better think about the CIA. You've got to think about all those other instruments of national power, the governmental agencies that can be brought to bear. Because that is how we win, not just by the Army, but quite frankly, by bringing a whole of government approach. So if you're not comfortable walking to an ambassador's office or engaging with the defense attaché as the first person you speak with and coordinate before you go into a country, you better start getting ready. You better look into that and understand how to go about that process. Because you are going to be tasked to do it. And if you go in like a bull in a china shop, like some people in the forces often do, you have just destroyed your first impression. So that's what it means to win, is by understanding and leveraging the whole of government. And often we talk about the DIME, D-I-M-E, diplomatic, information, military, and economic. Now, we are tasked to win in a complex world. So we've defined win, but what does complex mean? Complex is defined by our Trudeaucians, our TRADOC partners, as unknown, unknowable, and constantly changing. Wrap your head around that for a second. Unknown, unknowable, and constantly changing. So what does that mean about the future? If the future's complex, that means we cannot predict the future. We can describe it, but we cannot predict it. So in terms of having a specific training plan to understand X, Y, and Z, if you just focus on certain tasks, you likely won't have the right tools in the toolkit to win in that complex world. Does that make sense to you? Can you even fathom unknown, unknowable, and constantly changing? So even if you did know it, because it was possible to be known, it would be irrelevant because in the next second it had already changes. That is the state of the evolving environments in which we are put into. And now that's happening in a complex world. We've described complex as unknown, unknowable, and constantly changing. But what does the world mean? When we talk about world, we mean the whole multi-domain battle space. So don't just think battle in terms of military forces on the ground. Clearly, we have to understand where the joint spectrum is at. The Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, Coast Guard, Public Health Service who may show up, and the soft units on the ground who all have their own headquarters, all have their own different missions, and all will have some type of representation on the ground. You better think about that world, that multi-domain world, and just in the military, wrap your head around that. But you also better think about the other government agencies that will be there, we already talked about. If you're not familiar with the Department of State, you better get there. But now expand yourself out to what we refer to as the gym. the JIM, the Joint Interorganizational Multinational Environment. So I just talk about the Joint, the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, Public Health Service, soft environments. That's the joint world. What is the interorganizational? Well, let's talk about all the government organizations and the non-government organizations. So are you ready to engage with the international community, the Red Cross? Are you ready to engage with the United Nations, the World Health Organization, UNICEF? Are you ready to engage with the non-governmental organizations out there, in which there are thousands across the globe, some of whom will embrace the military, many who will not? Are you ready to show up in a camp from Medecins Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Borders? And are you able to check your ego at the door and say, I need your help? Because they've been on the ground already for months while the situation was developing and you just showed up yesterday. Are you able to think that way? Are you able to sit down with the table that's got all those different organizations sitting down? And oh, by the way, the World Bank shows up as well. Oh, and by the way, someone from the Gates Foundation shows up as well. And oh, by the way, there are reporters who show up as well. That's the interorganizational world. And now we've got to talk multinational. Because remember, you may well be working inside of a sovereign nation. And so it's not all about you. And we've worked it in a coalition before in Afghanistan and Iraq. And those were a coalition of the willing, some NATO and non-NATO partners. But are you ready to engage on the ground when the Chinese show up? Of course you're going to be thinking about the UK. Of course you're going to be thinking about Germany and France. But are you comfortable when the Russians show up? Are you comfortable when folks from Angola show up? The world that we're talking about is this multi-domain battle space. And think of it in terms of the JIM, J-I-M, the Joint Interorganizational Multinational. So again, we are tasked to win in a complex world. Winning means bringing to bear all instruments of national power. Diplomacy, information, military, economic. We must do this in a complex, which is defined as a unknown, unknowable, and constantly changing environment. And in a world which is the multi-domain battle space, and think of it as the JIM, the Joint Interorganizational Multinational Environment. So if we can't predict the future, how are we tasked and how can we ever hope to win? What do we have to focus on? Well, the reality is the only way that you can win in an environment that is unknown, unknowable, and constantly changing is if your rate of adaption, your ability to adapt to the environment, is equal to or greater than the rate of change going on around you. So you can't think in terms of individual tasks. What you have to think is processes that can be applied to the environment that are going on. You can't just stay back at home base and practice your metal task and think that you're good to go. Those become the baseline in which you leverage off of. And so for those special operators of you out there, what makes special operations forces great is that they can do the basics better than anybody else. And if they can do the basics incredibly well, when they need to adapt, when they need to change the adaption or the use of those basics, because they know them so well, they keep principles or priorities in place. They don't lose the forest for the trees. They keep the principles in place, but adapt the techniques in which they are put into place. So let's talk about this specifically and what are some of the adaptive techniques that we might use? Well, let me ask you this. If you've been in the military for a while as either a commander or as a medic, what has your guidance been as a whole about use of foreign medical facilities? And let me make it simple for you. You are deploying in a humanitarian mission in a semi-permissive environment that has hostilities going on. There is no U.S. footprint on the ground before you get there, which means there is not 60-minute medevac. In the sub-Sahara, there is no golden hour. There's no golden 4 hours. There's no golden day. You might have a golden 48 hours. So from a commander standpoint, you better wrap your head around this and get knee-deep into the plan. And not just knee-deep, but you need to get nipple-deep into this. Because it's your job to mitigate that risk, and it's the medic's job to come up with an adaptive plan to keep the patient alive. Don't think about perfect care that exists in Afghanistan or Iraq. Think about good enough care. So again, I would bring you back. What have most of you been warned about medical care in foreign hospitals? You've been told, quite frankly, don't use them, because they do not provide the standard of care that the U.S. would provide. Well, no shit, Sherlock, because you're not in the U.S. And the U.S. only got there when you stepped foot on the ground, except for the embassy that has been there for a while. So clearly the first thing you're going to do is you're going to go to the embassy and say, what hospital would you use here locally if your ambassador was hurt? And then you would go check that out. And you would say, if I needed to, could I use this facility? So the fact that there's already overhead cover, it's generally a facility that's going to have some degree of power and some degree of water and a system that understands some degree of medicine. So you've got a facility already built. The level of expertise of those medical people involved is in question, but you know they're at least accustomed to doing some type of medicine. So the question is, if you're the medical lead for that unit, could you go into that environment and at least use what they have? I would submit the answer is yes. So remember, we pride ourselves in the soft environment about doing good medicine in bad places. We pride ourselves in that mantra, good medicine in bad places. But when I commanded medical elements, I extended that to say, we do good medicine in bad places, but we will not tolerate bad medicine in good places. So I would submit, if you're the lone 18 Delta or the senior 18 Delta or medic on an operation inside of a sovereign country in a semi-permissive environment, and somebody gets hurt, if you try to take care of that patient on your own, out in the middle of the bush, rather than at least trying to get them to a host nation facility where you have some type of cover, some type of power, some type of other medical capability, I would submit that you're doing bad medicine in a good place. It's not the best place, but it's a better place. If you're not at least thinking about that, you're wrong. And in fact, we've got two generations of officers and NCOs. We have to reshape their thinking because they're so used to the golden hour, they're not willing to go down that path. Let me ask you another question. Let's say that you have a patient who now had a traumatic amputation and lost a great deal of blood, and you don't have blood with you, And this patient is now in class 4 shock. They need blood to survive. Because it's not just about the keeping them alive right now. It's about resuscitating them enough so that their prolonged care over the next 2 weeks, 2 months, or 2 years is affected by the resuscitation you do today, right now. So don't pat yourself on the back too much because you just put a tourniquet on and you stop the bleeding. If they're still in profound hypovolemic shock, what are you going to do? So I would ask you again, reflect. What have most people told you about using host nation blood? And don't think about the UK or Germany or France. Talk about Sub-Saharan. Most people have told you, you can't use that blood in African hospitals. So have you ever asked the question, why? Well, what are people's answers? Well, they're going to say, well, because you've got a risk of getting HIV. Okay, no shit, Sherlock. But consider this. What would your family say if you gave them the option between, I'm happy to report that your military member and your spouse is alive, although we must report also that they developed HIV from getting blood from a host nation country? Or would you rather report, on behalf of a grateful nation, we are sorry to report that your spouse has died from a lack of resuscitation of whole blood? What would your family rather have? A live spouse with HIV or a dead spouse clean of HIV? Now that's a no-brainer. But have we ever thought about that? Have we ever planned for that? So we talk about setting up whole blood exchanges, which is absolutely a critical task that we need to learn. But have we ever thought of bringing that own testing capability into the host nation hospital? So if they've got blood already drawn there and it's available, what about just doing the bedside testing there? I would just submit to you that if it's a difference between life or death, this is a no-brainer. You use the host nation medical facility and you use their blood if they have it and there is no other option. Because there is no golden hour. And your goal is to keep the patient alive and to mitigate the risk of death. Now, of course, you'd like to mitigate the risk of disease, but death is more important than the disease. If you're not thinking about this adaptive process in those austere environments, you're failing. You're failing. If all you're studying are the lessons learned from Afghanistan and Iraq, you're failing because you're using an outdated model. So let me ask another question. Have you considered the speed of getting a medical element into a sovereign country using a gray tail versus using commercial aircraft? Remember, your thought process comes back to Afghanistan and Iraq, and it's all about the TIBFID there. When are the listed aircraft flying in? Can I argue for space on that aircraft, and what can I bring with them when they come in? Well, you're working in a sovereign nation who likely has some degree of airfields and commercial air support. Have you ever thought about packing the medical gear into Pelican cases or suitcases that weigh less than 23 pounds so that they meet the less than 50 pounds threshold for the airlines? Have you ever thought of putting those medical providers on the aircraft in civilian clothes and flying them into the host nation country? I would submit to you, because I've done it, that you can get medical people in place in less than 24 hours in a sovereign nation that is not actively at war with medical kit and ready to be responsive and receive patients in less than 24 hours. But if you don't exercise it because you haven't thought about it, you're not going to do it. Well, this comes back to the host nation hospitals. If I know that I'm going someplace, or there's a high likelihood that I may be going to that place in the next 6 months, in the next year or 3 years, I could probably travel to that nation and spend some time on the ground by working through the embassy and the defense attaché, but ultimately from the ambassador, and spending time in those hospitals and understanding their flow. And maybe you bring down some medical providers, some no-kidding physicians and nurses, to spend a week or two working side-by-side those host nation providers in that facility. So the people in that facility actually get familiar with seeing American people and American military. And you build a trust and a relationship there before the crisis ever occurs. Imagine the power of that, because now you've developed a relationship and a familiarization during a permissive environment, during a time frame when people are not shooting at you. But you've done this so that when you get into an environment which turns all of a sudden into a non-permissive environment, you can call on friends or people who are at least familiar with the U.S. presence. And you could rapidly initiate a movement of personnel. We're using commercial aircraft in less than 24 hours and having stationed in that host nation facility. You don't need to bring tents. You don't need to bring all your heavy equipment. You do not need four C-17s to bring in that cash. The facility is all already on the ground. The infrastructure is already on the ground. You need to bring the clinical judgment forward. That's what we leverage in that environment. The clinical judgment that can tie in with a host nation facility with a limited amount of instruments. That, my friends, is adaptive thinking. That is how we plan during peacetime for a wartime or a complex environment. This sounds uncanny in how familiar it is, doesn't it?
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
And why should that sound familiar with you? Let's reflect now again on the five, you know them as four, but the five soft truths. And what are they? Humans are more important than hardware. This gets to the root of the adaptability of that soldier. And what is the most adaptable tool in the toolbox that the services has? The individual soldier or NCO. Humans are more important than hardware. Quality is more important than quantity. One good NCO who has been thinking about the environment, one good commander who understands that this is no longer Iraq or Afghanistan with 60-minute medevac and understands the risk can go a long way into mitigating risk and will do far better than 100 soldiers who don't have a clue. Now, these type of forces, rule number three, cannot be mass-produced. So this takes time to train on adaptability. And so those units, those individuals, those elements that are going to be tasked up front to be thrown into an evolving situation on the ground in a complex environment should focus on their adaptive abilities, not necessarily their individual skill sets. And not only can they not be mass-produced, but there's not time after the crisis occurs to generate that soft capability or that specialized adaptive skill set. Once the crisis has occurred, it's not time to ramp up the process to generate the right person to meet the need. So not only can they not be mass produced, you don't produce them after the crisis. You have to have them in the inventory now. And it's not only the individuals that have to be in the inventory, but the engagements that take place on the ground, developing personal relationship within sovereign countries before the crisis occurs, inside those hospitals and at those airfields, needs to happen before the crisis. And the fifth soft truth, which most people forget, is that most of these special operations require conventional support. So if you're part of that 12-man team, if you're not thinking joint and conventional, if you can't check your ego at the door and say, it's not about me, it's about survival of my team members, then you're not adaptive enough. You're not the person that we want. We are tasked to win in a complex world. By winning, we leverage all the instruments of national power, diplomacy, information, military, and economic. We must do this in a complex environment. Complex being defined as unknown, unknowable, and constantly changing. And we must do this in the world that is defined by the GIM, the Joint Interorganizational and Multinational Environment. Are you ready? Do you feel confident that you have those adaptive skills in place? Do you feel confident that you know how to engage with a defense attaché or an embassy or a non-governmental organization like Médecins Sans Frontières before you go? Are you able to check your ego at the door? Because quite frankly, the biggest enemy to the American soldier has never been the person shooting at them. It's been themselves or the environment. Themselves because they can't check their ego at the door, and the environment because they dismiss the threats or fail to take advantage of what exists there. Are you ready? You've got time to get ready because you can start thinking about how to be an adaptive soldier. Get your mind outside of the box of what was Afghanistan or Iraq. Think about the environment where you're the first person to step on the ground. And what will you use if you have to? Will you use the host nation hospital? My question is, why wouldn't you if that's all there is? Would you use host nation blood? My question is, why wouldn't you if that's all there is and it's required for survival? Are you comfortable engaging and asking what other facilities or mechanisms exist through the embassy to snap link into? You better. Many of us are not ready. Many commanders are not ready. They can get ready. But they have to think about winning in a complex world, and that means adaptability. I wish you the best of luck on your journey. You are the national treasure. You are the sons and daughters of the nation, and you have volunteered to be a service member. Thank you for your service. Thank you for your family's sacrifice. I look forward to meeting you on the key terrain in a future war. This is Jim Zarnik. Godspeed and good luck.
For today's podcast, be sure to go to our website, www.prolongfieldcare.org. Find us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. Subscribe and stay on the bleeding edge of combat medicine. This is Dennis for the PFC Podcast. Out. Every boy is waiting there for you.